Slutty Disgusting Podcast Network.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare Alley, a detour podcast from Nightmare on Film Street. I'm Kim.
I'm John.
And this week, we spoke to writer-director Brandon Cronenberg, who's releasing the crazy mindfuck of a film, Possessor, this weekend.
Possessor hits select movie theaters and drive-ins this weekend, October 2nd. It stars Andrea Riseborough and Christopher Abbott in a story about corporate espionage and just, like, fucking assassins from a near, like, 5 minutes in the future, right? Like, this shit is about to start happening. Andrea Riseborough essentially possesses a person and then uses their body like a fucking maniacal puppeteer to carry out corporate assassinations, murder people, and just, like, ruin lives.
And slip out undetected.
Right? Oh, man. It's a real wild fucking story.
Yeah, this movie is gross. It's crazy.
In all the right
gory,
ways.
And we learn some really fun, fantastic things from Brandon Cronenberg, who revealed that the film is all practical, which was a nice surprise.
Oh, and yeah.
All of the visual effects are done in camera, which is so fucking cool.
Even the lighting, like, there are some really crazy hallucinatory sequences that just look fucking amazing. And all of that in camera. None of the color grading was done in post, except for, you know, obviously, like, small touch-ups and stuff.
If you haven't seen the film yet, don't worry, we will not be spoiling the whole movie, so you can feel free to listen to this interview before you go see it if you've already seen it. Hopefully you love it as much as we do, and this interview helps just feed that fire a little bit more. But before we send you to the interview, here is the trailer for Possessor Uncut.
You have a very special nature. One we've worked hard together to unlock.
The results are normal.
Anything you want to flag?
No, I'm fine.
Mom! Hi, darling.
How was your trip?
Dull. Extraordinarily dull.
Our next contract's a big one.
The target is the CEO of the largest operation in the U.S. You'll be binding to Colin Tate.
We can't afford any mistakes on this one.
Ready?
What's with you today?
What do you mean? I'm in place.
Can we help you?
Finish this.
What are you doing?
I can't pull the trigger.
I need to know what she's done to me.
It's become a danger.
Where is she? Come out or I'll do it!
Sometimes that small thought is all it takes to lose control.
Brandon, thank you so much for joining us on the show today to talk about your new film, Possessor.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We're really excited to talk to you about it. We have nothing but good things to say about this movie. It's so twisted and weird, and it's right up our alley.
That's very kind of you, and very calming at the start of an interview to know that you'll only hear good things.
Yeah, and you know, I think most people are going to misconstrue this movie as like a standard body horror movie. But it's definitely more of an identity horror movie that deals with, like, the, we'll call it body horror of of the mind, I guess.
I think so too. I mean, I think that's really what it's about. There's this, you know, the kind of sci-fi thriller and the horror elements work with that main theme, but at its core, it's about who we are. I think that's at least where the genesis of the script was, and that was the theme that I was interested in exploring initially.
And where did that what was that original kernel of the idea that sort of inspired the rest of the screenplay?
I think I was on the press tour for Antiviral, which was my first feature. It's very strange when you're traveling with a film for the first time, because you're kind of inventing this public persona and performing yourself in a strange way and performing this kind of media self, which then runs off and has its own strange life without you online. So between that and a few other things, I was going through a bit of a strange period, waking up in the mornings and sitting up feeling that I was sitting up into someone else's life and having to kind of scramble to construct some kind of character who could operate in that context, which, you know, that's a very particular version of that, but I think essentially that's not a totally uncommon experience. And so I wanted to write a script about a character who may or may not be an imposter in their own life, and use that to talk about how we build characters and narratives just to operate as people, essentially.
That's really cool, because it almost makes Possessor kind of a spiritual sequel to Antiviral, in that Antiviral is kind of about the obsession of celebrity, and then Possessor stems from your kind of first foray into some kind of notoriety and feeling that kind of identity pull of the second entity of being a filmmaker.
Yeah, that's funny. It is a bit of an aftershock film that way.
Yeah, and I mean, both of them, they have their good characters and bad characters, but I feel like the real Big Bad Wolf, the real villain, is like multi-million dollar corporations.
right. I mean, you know, it's the world we live in. I mean, it's very interesting because, you know, looking back at corporate history, you had companies like the Dutch East India Company, who had their own private militaries and I think ruled Indonesia for centuries. And, you know, some people would consider the Knights Templar to be the first multinational. It's amazing. The history is amazing. I mean, they started as this Catholic military order, but they ended up managing this huge economy and having creating a kind of early banking system. So part of my interest in this film, although this was very like tertiary interest, was that history of corporations, the idea of modern corporations and tech companies returning to this place where they have almost power on the level of states, and what that would look like if they started to venture into Cold War territory with each other.
Yeah, I mean, we hear about corporate assassinations just already. Like, we don't hear about them in the strange sci-fi way that it's taken place in your movie, but it's like corporations give people permission to just lose their humanity.
I mean, yeah, there's such a long history of sci-fi that deals with that, obviously. I was thinking recently about Snow Crash. I haven't read Snow Crash for a long time, but this brilliant idea that there are, you know, neighborhoods that are owned by different companies, I feel like now makes so much sense when you look at, you know, tech campuses, but that was decades ago.
Yeah, I remember hearing about Disney owning a neighborhood, and they're like, oh yeah, we're just today's Christmas, even though it's May, and like, I can't imagine what that does to like a child's mind growing up, like thinking that they live in a fairy tale world.
Yeah, it must be very strange. And in Toronto, there was an interesting project that I think fell apart, but Google was trying to create a smart neighborhood in Toronto that for a number of years, that was going to be a place with a lot of advanced technology. The idea was that you had all of this high-tech gear. What would it look like to design a smart neighborhood? But of course, it's Google. I don't think Google are like more evil than any other major tech company or something, but because their whole business is based around data mining. I mean, you could imagine the Gmail business model applied to your entire life. And it, I feel like that's sort of inevitable on a certain level. And which sort of that inspired some of the surveillance elements of the film. I mean, the Snowden leaks happened while I was writing, and so that was also part of it. But this idea of the death of privacy through technology and some of the possession itself was, in a way, a kind of, I guess, metaphor for surveillance.
slightly less evil, there is a place called Vegandale in Toronto, which is just all, like, it's a whole block of just vegan food, which is, it's kind of nice.
Hey, oh, you know about Vegandale.
We're just outside of Toronto.
Yeah, we're in Ajax.
Oh, you're in Ajax?
Yeah.
You're in Ajax and you know about Vegandale? How is
it? We're vegan also.
Okay, yeah, me too.
So data mining too is something that comes up in your movie, and it terrifies me that we're like maybe, I don't know, 2 years away from just having like our Alexa or Google Nest like actually spying on us, and we know about it and we're cool with it.
Yeah, the segment in the movie is actually like, it's the funniest segment, but it's seriously the darkest part of the movie.
Well, it's so close to what's our, I mean, again, Gmail as a model, it's very, there are good things about Gmail, but also the idea that you're sort of actively giving up your privacy on a certain level in order to have this service. And, you know, I was reading about Siri and Alexa and how, you know, this isn't built into the service yet, but how they were activating they sometimes will just activate, record 30 seconds of your life and then send it to contractors to determine whether the service is functioning properly. But because it activates at random, it was recording people having personal conversations, people at their doctor's appointments talking about their health, people in business meetings, people having sex, and it was just sending not even to Apple, but to sort of, or to Google, but to these sort of companies, contractors that track their services and make sure they're functioning properly. So it's all already it's already happening, and it's like as bad as you think it is.
it's already bad.
That's kind of what's great too about the timeline of the film, because there's this kind of dystopian present day in that, like, this, the technology itself could already exist because it's so private and intimate in the story of the film. So like, this could be existing at a company up the street from you and you would never know.
No, absolutely. And I mean, even the possession technology, it's obviously, I don't think that actually exists, but it is rooted in actual neuroscience, though. Some really interesting neuroscience experiments that were done in the 50s and 60s, for instance. I was reading about this one doctor, Jose Delgado, who is a Spanish doctor working out of the US, who was exploring brain implants and electrical stimulation of certain brain areas, and was able to control this fairly alarming range of functions in the subjects, including, I mean, motor functions, but also emotions. And also, to me, the most interesting thing was that depending on the place in the brain where the implant would stimulate, some of the subjects would perform a series of actions, but then retrofit their own motivation onto those actions. So it's like a patient would, every time he pressed a button and it would stimulate this part of his brain, the patient would get up and walk around a chair and then sit down and perform exactly the same series of motions. But every time he did that, he would insist that he had chosen to do it because of some reason, like he had heard a noise or he was looking for his shoes or something like that. So there's this function of the brain, which is totally fascinating, which is it sort of decides after the fact whether something came from inside and then ascribes the sense of it being your own self and your own will onto what you just did, but sort of after the fact. And I feel like that's, I mean, a fascinating science, but metaphorically pretty interesting, especially looking at, say, you know, what we're dealing with with social media right now, how, you know, foreign states influencing the US elections and how people feel that they have these opinions, but they're actually generated externally, but they cling to them as though they're such an essential part of their identities.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
That really makes the possession in your movie even more terrifying, because that means that after, well, I guess a lot of people die in your movie, but you know, afterward they wouldn't say, oh my god, it was like I was under control by someone else. They would say, oh yeah, I did this. I wanted to do this. I killed these people for no reason.
Yeah, no, exactly. There's a kind of, and there's a little bit of that in the film where it's, you know, Colin is sort of trying to look back at why he did things and having these memories and saying, oh yeah, I did it because I was just angry, or I was trying to defend myself, or, you know, trying to wrestle with his memories of his recent actions and determining that he did them.
Yeah, and that push and pull that you have between Colin and Voss, played by Christopher Abbott and Andrea Riseborough, is so good. And your visualization of their sort of like mental struggle is incredible. Like, where did you, how did you start to develop the visual language for explaining that fight?
So it started very early on. I mean, it was an 8-year process getting the film made after Antiviral. And on Antiviral, I met Kareem Hussein and some of my other close collaborators. Kareem's my cinematographer. We all became close friends, and actually Kareem lived down the street from me for a lot of that development period. So we really had a long time to play around with visual ideas. Essentially, all the effects in the film are practical. All of those hallucination scenes are completely in-camera practical effects. And you know, the melting and stuff, that's just fantastic work by Dan Martin, the lead effects artist on the film. But the camera effects and that aesthetic came through essentially years of experimentation with Kareem. Sort of now and then, as the film was getting developed, we would get together and play with video feedback and projection tricks and gels and coloring and lens flares, and just created a kind of bank of visual ideas that we wanted to use eventually for the feature. And which we experimented with some short films and some music videos, just to try out different ideas in context.
And so when did Andrea Riseborough and Christopher Abbott get involved in the process? Because their performances and what you're able to get out of them in this movie is incredible, because you can see each of them in each other's faces, essentially, right?
I mean, it's kind of you to say what I get out of them, but really, they made my job incredibly easy. They're both such brilliant actors. You know, it was interesting because obviously they play the same character to a certain degree, or there's a certain amount of overlap. And so going into it, I thought that was going to be something very difficult. And there were a couple of early discussions we had, because I was trying to figure out what the process would be, like what sort of formal process we would use to approach that. Did they want to be on set for each other's scenes and watch each other? Did one of them want to take the lead and the other one mimic that actor, and so on? There was a bit of a rabbit hole that we could go down initially, just sort of theoretically approaching it. In practice, it was a very easy and organic process, I think, just because they're so good and so great to work with and so full of ideas. And, you know, I had my own specific thoughts about how to demonstrate that the character existed across both performances and how that would work. They had their own ideas that they brought at that stage during shooting. I understand they spoke a lot behind the scenes and checked in with each other about, you know, what Voss would do in a particular situation to kind of keep that coherent between the two of them. And then obviously on a sort of scene by scene basis, we just worked as we were shooting and blocking and so on. So for me, it was actually very easy. I don't know how much of it is what I got out of them versus, you know, just the fact that they were great, but it felt like a very organic process and collaborative process that we kind of built out together.
That's great. I mean, and you really put them through hell in some scenes, or at least you put their characters through hell in some scenes.
I hope I didn't put them through hell, but I mean, there was a lot of fake blood involved, and I know that's not comfortable for actors to be in, like, wet, bloody wardrobe for a long time, so I apologize. I apologize to my actors, but...
Yeah, like, it's... And the level of violence in your movie is shocking and surprising, because it's more... I would call it body destruction in some certain scenes. And that's all done practical as well, correct?
Yeah, it's all practical. I mean, there was a very small amount of cleanup for the, you know, bloodline removal and a little bit of touch up here and there. But it was just Dan Martin is so good. And in particular, his fake heads are so completely exquisite. It's hard to make a convincing fake head. But there's some elements in those, for instance, the melting scenes where people... Or some of the, you know, the knife entering into the neck and that kind of thing, where people have assumed it was CGI somehow, but it was actually just Dan being very good at designing those effects and executing them with his team.
That knife entering the neck thing too. Ooh. Is something that I just one, it looks great, but is something that I can't wait for people to see the movie, because there's something so specific about it that I want to talk to people about, in that how you edit it and where it comes. And it's just that brilliant thing that you see, like guys like Nicholas Rogue doing in Don't Look Now, where you're seeing two images against each other, but it's the third one that you see in your head that isn't on screen that's like the real context of the scene. How do you do that, man? That's like magic.
That's very kind of you. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's the great thing about filmmaking, honestly, is it's an art form that essentially plays with how the human brain works, I think. Even just something as simple as constructing a fictional space out of different real world spaces is so gratifying somehow. You shoot someone in one location, you shoot another person in another location, you edit it, and it becomes one location with two people in it. And it's just, I mean, to a certain extent, we learn the language of film as we're watching film, and so that has obviously developed, but there's something so great about the fact that putting two images together just generates this effect in the mind, you know, that sews up this world and creates this world. And so I think it's, yeah, a film that plays with some very basic psychological functions in an exciting way.
Oh yeah, and this is also the uncut version. Like, what's the censored version of this movie look like?
So the uncut version, it's the full, complete, essentially. In the US, the unrated director's cut. In Canada, it's just 18A, so it doesn't have that same problem. But so there is a cut version that was cut to get an R rating in the States. So fortunately, I've had a huge amount of support from my distributors. I mean, Elevation in Canada and Neon and Welgo in the US. And we've been putting out the uncut version as the lead version, but there are just some platforms that aren't going to play an unrated film in general, and especially one with some of that content. So there's a sort of a slightly toned down, I would argue less good and less fun version, but you know, it's fun. It's a necessary evil, and I'm just happy that I had the support to put out the full film.
Less good and less fun because there's less violence, or because there's less sex?
There's less of both. Yeah. I'll be honest with you.
It's just less gratuitous in general.
It's less gratuitous in general, which, you know, I mean, I guess your mileage may vary, but...
All right, so don't go see the less fun version. See the uncut version.
If you can, I would certainly promote the uncut version. But that's obviously what I'm going to do.
Before we let you go, we like to ask everybody if they could. We like to ask everybody what their dream double feature is at the drive-in. If you could program one screen for the night, what would you play?
I have no idea. I have no good. I have no good answer for that. Looking at my shelf right now, I am going to say Fail Safe and Doctor Strangelove would be a good.
Oh man, I did that double bill earlier this year.
Oh well, there you go. We're on the same page.
That was and it was a first time watch for Failsafe. It's like one of the most stressful things I've ever watched, especially during quarantine.
Yeah, it's very, very stressful.
Yeah, just the end of the world all over the place.
Actually, funny note, Possessor is actually playing at our local drive-in this weekend, and I'm kind of excited to see it just because there's a kids movie playing on the screen next to it, and it's just like, what if the other cars look over? It's gonna be fun to just see it in a public space.
For sure. I mean, it's funny, the politics of drive-ins and what can play where and how people feel about that. It's its own completely other world.
Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us, man. We really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun for me too.
Possessor hits select theaters and drive-ins on October 2nd, this weekend, so go check out the film and let us know what you thought. We loved it. We'd love to tweet with you about it. You can hit us up at NOFS Podcast on Twitter. We're on Instagram, instagram.com/Nightmare on Film Street. If you want more bonus content and to support Nightmare on Film Street, head to patreon.com/Nightmare on Film Street.
But until next time, I'm John.
Kim?
Stay creepy. And happy Halloween, right?
Yeah, October 1st. It's October.
What? We fucking made it, everybody.
We did it. We're here. Like cries into pumpkin patch.
Oh, I'm so happy.
I've never been so desperate for pumpkins in my life.
It appears you made it out alive. But we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.